It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Brett Baer, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. I'm Dave Anthony. Former President Trump returns to court today for a criminal trial in New York that may not hurt his 2024 campaign.
I think either a guilty verdict or a hung jury is basically, if that's the result, is kind of priced into the polling right now.
And Lisa Brady. Many Americans aren't buying what President Biden is selling about the economy because they're not feeling it.
They're going to the gas station right now and it stinks. They're going to the grocery store, it stinks. They're going to the car lot, it stinks. They're looking at houses, it stinks. Everything stinks. All that stuff looks unaffordable.
And I'm Jason Chaffetz. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Election day keeps creeping ever closer. It's now 27 weeks away.
I see an economy that grows from the middle out and the bottom up, where the wealthy pay their fair share, so we can have child care, paid leave, and so much more, and still reduce the federal deficit and increase economic growth.
But as President Biden keeps making his case for 4 more years, the economy is slowing down, prompting former President Trump to say after the report on less GDP growth last quarter,
the numbers are very bad. This is Bidenomics. It's catching up with them.
The new CNN poll gives the former president a 6-point lead ahead of their 2024 rematch. It's a 9-point Trump lead factoring in third party candidates. 6 in 10 voters in the survey say the Biden presidency is a failure, while 55% say the Trump presidency was a success. But the two remain close in battleground state polls.
I've always said that the way to read the polls at this stage is to primarily just look at Trump's number.
Arnon Mishkin is the director of the Fox News Decision Desk.
Because I think in the end, Trump is going to get whatever number the average of the poll shows at the, in the last few weeks of the election. I think basically Trump is such a primary color character that, and everyone in America knows whether they love him or don't love him. And those number, that issue isn't going to change. And it's always sort of in the mid to high 40s that we've seen lately in the CNN poll. He's at 49. He was at 49 a few weeks ago in the CNN poll. Biden, on the other hand, is this pastel colored, plain vanilla journeyman politician. And I would argue that there's no one who really loves him, and there are very few who really hate him. There are a lot of people who hate his policies, and a lot of people who kind of support his policies. But and that's why when you look at the polls, depending on the pollster, it always seems like Trump stays where he is in that poll, and Biden bounces around based on what's been happening. And lately, what's been happening with Biden is a little negative. Despite the fact that, you know, the inside baseball players feel like he won in Congress on aid to Ukraine. He got a lot of bills through Congress. That, to most voters, is truly inside baseball. What matters is what they see on the ground. And what they see on the ground is the border is still a problem. Inflation is not going away. Ukraine is still a stalemate. The situation in Gaza with the war between Israel and Hamas is ugly at best, and Biden doesn't seem to be able to stop any of that.
And there's all these protests across the country, too, on the campuses that are pro-Palestinian. And it's interesting because that's a lot of noise in April. We have no idea what any of this is going to be like in November.
That's exactly right. And the other thing that's coming out in the polls is that the public, and by the public, I mean a majority of the public, believes that Donald Trump was a successful president. They judge Trump based on the first 3 years pre-COVID of his administration, when the economy was strong, there wasn't a war going on. And they say Trump was a good president. Meanwhile, Biden has all these other issues going on right now. And the majority of the public thinks Biden has not been a successful president. Now, that is a real opportunity for the former president. It's also a bit of an opportunity for Joe Biden because he does have 6 months to change some of that. Is the situation in Gaza and the war going to change between now and November? And people say foreign policy doesn't matter ever in elections. Foreign policy shows whether or not a president is feckless, the way Jimmy Carter was, or a president is effective, the way Ronald Reagan was. And even though people don't really care about foreign policy, they care about seeing if their president is any good. And so Biden has a chance in these situations to make himself appear responsible or effective, but he also has a risk of appearing feckless.
So Vice President Harris on Monday went to Georgia, went to Atlanta, focusing on economic opportunity, the Biden agenda. Obviously, on the economy, gets negative marks with a majority of voters. There was a Wall Street Journal survey earlier in April that seemed to suggest that a majority of black men may consider voting for former President Trump in swing states. Do you think that that part of the electorate can swing that much away from Democrats in the 2024 election?
I would be skeptical that Joe Biden is going to lose the black vote. But I do think that every pollster has suggested that there is a weakness amongst minority voters, both African-American and Hispanic voters. And both those groups are groups that Biden needs to win. He needs to win the African-American vote by 90%. I don't think he's going to lose the African-American vote, but I do believe the polls are suggesting he ain't going to get 90% of it. And that's a problem. And he also is going to win the Hispanic vote, I believe. But again, if he wins that Hispanic vote with 75%, that's one story. If he wins the Hispanic vote with 60%, that's a very different story. And that's a story. And both those numbers are suggestive that Donald Trump moves into the White House again in January of 25.
The issue, though, for Democrats seems to still be like it was in 2022, the Supreme Court and the ruling on abortion that has moved this issue in the states and lawsuits, and there's also ballot issues. Can that issue be the winner for President Biden that they're hoping?
It depends on your definition of winner, okay? Do I think that energizes many Democrats? Absolutely. Do I think that, one thing it has absolutely done is it has given them a way to use Vice President Kamala Harris effectively, because basically they put her on Air Force One every day. She travels to a state. She visits an abortion clinic. She talks about the importance of abortion rights. And she gets on Air Force One and goes to another state to do the same thing. And she's been doing that fairly effectively. And so, yes, do I think it helps them? Absolutely. Do I think that it and maybe that's 1 or 2 points. But I don't think that in and of itself is going to carry them to victory unless they have some other stuff to tell the public about.
There's a Monmouth poll that came out also on Monday of so-called double haters. That was the headline out of the poll. That essentially 1 in 6 voters don't like either President Biden or former President Trump. How much of a story can they be in this election? Do you think that number is a surprise? I was thinking it might actually be higher than that.
Yeah, I would have thought it would be higher than that as well. I think it is a story. Because up to now, those polls of double haters suggest that Trump is winning them. And by the way, the reason Trump won the White House in 2016 is because the double haters, the people who hated Hillary and hated Trump, voted for Trump, basically because many people in the media were assuring voters that there's no way Clinton could lose that election. And so they thought she's not going to win. She doesn't even have my vote. And so I hate them both. The easiest way to express that is to vote for Trump. I don't know if history repeats itself this time. I think that Biden needs to focus on that. He needs to figure out a message that tells people who don't really like him that, guess what, he's been kind of effective, and come up with something that demonstrates that he actually, for an old guy, he knows what he's doing. So far, I don't think they've gotten that message across at all.
This morning, testimony resumes at the first Trump criminal trial in New York. Fox's Eric Schon is outside the court.
Back on the stand will be Michael Cohen's former banker, Gary Farrow. On Friday, Farrow testified that he urgently set up a shell company, Essential Consultants, that prosecutors say was used to move the money to pay off Stormy Daniels. But so far, no witness has tied Trump directly into the alleged scheme to hide his alleged affairs, both with Stormy and allegedly with former Playboy playmate Kara McDougal, to hide them from the public to protect his presidential campaign.
He is only charged in this trial with falsifying records over the payments to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet in 2016. The former president continues to say it's political persecution, election interference.
There's no case whatsoever. It's a disgrace. We have a conflicted judge, and it shouldn't be happening, not in this country.
A big unknown, how this trial will affect the 2024 vote.
I think either a guilty verdict or a hung jury is basically, if that's the result, is kind of priced into the polling right now. The one thing that would work to Trump's favor very well is if he comes out with a not guilty verdict. I think it's baked in, even a conviction. I think you see so many leaders of the Republican Party already sort of building that fence by saying that they'll support Trump even if he's convicted. And so I don't see it as being that impactful. You'd rather, when you're running for president, you'd rather not be under indictment. You'd rather not be in court 4 days a week. But I think that everyone sort of, particularly those people who think the former president was effective, think that's the price we have to pay to get someone who's going to be enough of a disruptor to fix things in America.
Two of the battleground states, Georgia and Arizona, both have indictments related to the 2020 election and Trump attempts to overturn the Biden victory in those states. But the former president in the Fox poll recently has a pretty good lead in Georgia, and he could still win Arizona again, despite all that, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, I think particularly given that they look like they're going to overturn the 1864 law banning all forms of abortion in Arizona. The border is going to be really important in Arizona. Hispanic voters in Arizona are, I think, focused on the border. And so I think that he could easily win one or both of those states. They are kind of must win states for Trump. They're important wins states for Biden. But absolutely, he could. Trump can easily win those states, despite the fact that in one state he's under indictment and in another state all his people are under indictment for trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election.
Is there a must win for President Biden of those states, the battleground states?
In the battleground states, I'd say the must win are Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And all those look iffy right now.
Arnon Mishkin, director of the Fox News Decision Desk, 27 weeks until Election Day. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services, marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area. So you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. On December 14th, 2010, U.S. Border Patrol agent Brian Terry was killed in the line of duty in Arizona. The investigation exposed the ATF's botched Operation Fast and Furious. This week, I'm joined by retired ATF Deputy Assistant Director Peter Forselli as he discusses how he became a whistleblower and the lengths he had to go through to clear his name for telling the truth. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
This is Jason Chaffetz with your Fox News commentary coming up.
When the Fed begins its latest two-day meeting today, there's a lot to chew on, including sticky inflation. But many economists expect the same result as the last several meetings. No change for interest rates. After aggressively raising rates to cool inflation, policymakers are now trying to get the timing right to start cutting rates, while many Americans just keep trying to make ends meet. Though perspectives on the economy are mixed.
I think the economy is getting better, and I think if we give it time, it will continue to get better.
Inflation's horrible, and we know we pay too much taxes. We're sending all that money overseas.
I think that it was bad now and 4 years ago.
The CEO of the largest bank in the U.S., J.P. Morgan Chase's Jamie Dimon, said recently it's looking more like the 1970s. And while he's still hoping for a so-called soft landing from high inflation, avoiding recession, he calls himself more dubious than others that a soft landing is a given. The Fed's preferred gauge on inflation, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, or PCE, was up 2.8% year over year in March. That's just slightly higher than expected, but it follows a March increase in the Consumer Price Index.
Well, the problem is it's an uptick. In the ideal world, it could be fast or slow, but you want to see inflation coming down.
Brian Brenberg is co-host of The Big Money Show on Fox Business.
It's the trend that matters. So when you start to bend up again, which we have, and it's not a huge bend up, but it's a move up, that does make things very tricky for a Fed that says it's data dependent, because you now have the data in and it's telling you the progress we were seeing has at least stalled for a minute. So I don't really know what's going on behind the scenes with the Fed. We might get a window when they come out and they start their meeting again this month. We're going to find out, okay, what are they thinking about? We'll see if they change their language. But the risk here is inflation stalls at this high level, and then the policymakers don't know what to do. Do we have to raise interest rates to keep moving back down? Do we leave them where they are? That might be feel nice in the short run, but does that let this inflation catch hold again? So that question mark is a huge problem for the economy. Businesses hate question marks. They want to know what's going to happen next. And in the policy environment, if it's a question mark, then they're going to be kind of sitting on pins and needles, and that's tough for investment.
Is the elusive soft landing in jeopardy then, or was it never really within reach?
Well, you know, this becomes this exercise in what is a soft landing. I mean, in some ways, it's been softish right now up until now. But if we get a reacceleration in inflation, what ends up happening is you start saying to yourself, we're going to have higher interest rates potentially for a very long time. And that's going to be bumpy for an economy that's gotten used to very, I mean, you think about how long interest rates have been low. I mean, way more than a decade at this point. There's a generation of people in the workforce that have never really known high interest rates. So you don't know how that's all going to interact if we get to that point where people say they're not really going to come down. This is where Jamie Dimon comes in and says we might be looking at stagflation, which means a stagnant economy, not growing that much, but with higher than we want inflation. And remember, that's not a term that we've used much in this country, except back in the 70s and early 80s. And that was ugly. And everyone who was there knows it's ugly. And so I do think it would be ugly again if we really got to that point. We don't know yet, but we're kind of looking in that direction right now, given what's happened with inflation.
President Biden keeps pointing to overall progress. He highlights job gains, wage gains, the retreat from peak inflation.
Right.
What's it going to take, though, for people to actually feel it? Because in poll after poll, they're not feeling that progress.
Right.
And I know that in a lot of those numbers that he likes to cite, there's always some fine print that isn't as rosy, especially when it comes to the jobs and the wage gains.
Yeah, well, he likes to claim a lot of the jobs that came back after the pandemic, which people throw a flag right away and they say, ah, you didn't do that. That was just reopening the economy. Here's what I think it's going to take. High interest rates are really biting people right now because it's going to things like houses and cars, kind of those American dream type things that feel like they're out of reach because of high interest rates. So I don't know that people are going to feel a lot better about the economy until they start to see that come down a little bit. Prices are still high. Prices have not come down. We're just kind of seeing wages sort of start to outpace inflation in a few months here and there. But that's kind of got to rocket. People got to feel like I'm earning way more than prices are going up. Again, in order to feel like they're getting on top of the situation. So to me, all those ugly poll numbers about the economy are going to stay that way until people start saying, oh, houses are more affordable again, cars are more affordable again, and you know what? My paycheck is growing, and I really like that.
And isn't a substantial part of the new hiring recently been part-time
jobs?
It's not all full-time work, right? Which, of course, has a big impact on wages, too.
No, by some measures, actually, it looks like it's almost all part-time work. So there again, you talk about the numbers and you talk about the life beneath the numbers. And it's the life beneath the numbers that get people. You know they're stringing together a couple jobs or they're in a job, but it's not a very stable job. And they're probably not getting as paid as much as they'd like to get paid, given what their budget is looking like every month. So you got to get beneath the numbers and you got to kind of get into the lived part of what it means to be a family in America. And they're going to the gas station right now and it stinks. They're going to the grocery store, it stinks. They're going to the car lot, it stinks. They're looking at houses, it stinks. Everything stinks. All that stuff looks unaffordable. You can't blame people for feeling badly about that. Even if on average, the statisticians say things look good, nobody lives average. Nobody lives average. And that's, I think, why people say, I don't buy it. I just don't buy the tale right now that I'm getting from the White House.
There's a new bank rate study that finds renting is now cheaper than buying a typical home in all 50 of the largest U.S. metropolitan areas. I mean, it used to be, you know, the reasoning why throw money away on rent if you can get a mortgage for about the same money.
Yeah.
But now it, you know, it's not even an option for a lot of people. What's needed to change that?
Right. You can't get the house cheaper than you can rent. And so you're left with the option of renting. Look, interest rates will come down when it's very clear that inflation is heading to 2%. That's, in my view, that's not going to happen until we do something about the $2 trillion every year budget deficit that we have in this country. The Fed has raised interest rates, but the government is spending like crazy, way beyond where we were spending before the pandemic. If that doesn't come back down to reality and those budget deficits don't narrow a little bit, I just don't think you're going to get inflation under control in a way where it's obvious that the data says cut interest rates. And until you do that, the housing market's going to be seized. I mean, it is seized up. People don't want to sell a house, not because they love the house, but they're wedded to the low mortgage. That is a fundamentally bad reason to hold on to a house,
yeah.
But it's where a lot of people are right now.
Well, if you got 3% now, you don't want to jump to a 6 or 7%.
You're more in love with 3% than you are with the house you live in. But if you're talking about trading 3 for 7 or 8, okay, I get it. But it just doesn't work for the new home buyer. It doesn't work for confidence.
There also seems to be a generation gap on spending in the current economy. Fortune magazine has a piece out on baby boomers accounting for a larger share than ever of consumer spending with a wealth effect there that's helping to drive inflation. What's that about?
Well, they own stocks. Stocks have done great in a low interest rate environment. And when people look at their portfolio go up, you know, it's kind of like, well, I got money in the bank, so to speak. So I feel okay about spending now. And they're doing that. You know, they're spending that wealth that's been created in the stock market. So, but the way an economy grows and the way it gets stronger is the investment side of life, investing in the things that help to make you more productive long-term, building a business or a home that you're going to live in for many years. So we're sort of eating into the seed corn, you know, to use an old farming expression, right? Either plant the stuff or you eat it. And it feels like an economy where we're eating it. And for the next generation, we got to be planting it. I just don't know that we're doing that right now.
I did want to ask one car related question.
Yeah.
Because obviously you've touched on it a bit, but that's a major expense, again, right, that people are having a hard time affording. The used car market's been hot for a really long time now, right? And of course, now we get the push for electric vehicles. But that's proving difficult both for buyers and for the automakers. Ford in the first quarter losing $132,000 on each EV it sold. How is that even possible?
Yeah, that's stretching difficult to the, you know, the bounds of what that word can mean. It's a ton of money. And they're losing it because they're investing a lot of money in trying to build this EV business. And they're just not selling that many. They only sold 10,000 EVs last quarter. That was down 20% from the number they sold the year before that quarter. But even worse, their revenue on those were down 84%.
Wow.
So what that tells you is they were selling fewer cars and they were cutting prices like mad to do it. That's not sustainable. But they got into that business in a big way because they saw a lot of government cash being waived and they thought they were reading the tea leaves, and they were wrong. People can't afford those cars. They don't trust those cars. So either consumers are going to have to decide they like EVs really fast, which I don't think that's going to happen, or the government, and this is what I'm afraid of, is going to get in even more and say, remember, we did bailouts for auto companies not that long ago. Might they do it again for EVs? I wouldn't put it past them.
I always try to end on somewhat of a positive
note.
Yeah,
I love that.
Give me a ray of hope for anyone listening who's like really worried about the big picture right now, especially if they're not feeling any of the progress that has happened or supposedly happened.
Right. Yes. Here's my ray of hope. There is a huge population of people in America who are really entrepreneurial, and they are not wedded to the way things have always been done. And what you're seeing right now is a big shift, I think, especially in terms of education, where people are saying, you know, the system we have is too expensive and it's not teaching our kids what they need, and they're shifting. To private alternatives, they're shifting. To the trades, they're shifting. To entrepreneurship first, education as you go. That is going to work. That is what has made America prosperous. And we're so deluged by what's going on campus and its ugly stuff, but there's a core of America doing this thing quietly but diligently. And I was out at the Ramsey conference a week and a half ago to talk with some of those folks. They are the most confidence-inspiring people in the world. There's good things. We just got to stop doing so many of the unproductive things first.
Fox Business's Brian Bremberg, yep, thank you so much
you
for your time.
Tons of fun.
I'm Anna Eliopoulos with your Fox True Crime Minute. Body parts strewn around portions of New York's Long Island earlier this year, now leading to murder charges. Jeffrey Mackey and Alexis Nieves pleading not guilty on Monday to killing Malcolm Brown and Donna Keneally over a dispute regarding a knife point robbery at a gas station they committed earlier. Initially, Mackey and Nieves were charged with concealing a corpse and tampering with evidence. Christopher Gio, Nieves' attorney, says the district attorney's office has got it wrong.
They're going to present their case based on the evidence that they have, and we are going to fight that. My client from the very beginning of this case has maintained her innocence. She claimed that she did not do it. I do find it interesting that four people were arrested originally and only two have been indicted on murder.
Those other two people are Stephen Brown, the deceased Brown's cousin, and Amanda Wallace. They have not been charged in the killings, but face other charges related to the murders, including concealment of a corpse and hindering prosecution. There's more on this story at foxnews.com. Subscribe to the Fox True Crime Podcast with Emily Campagno. I'm Anna Eliopoulos with your Fox True Crime Minute.
This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by partner and managing director of Beacon Global Strategies, Michael Allen, for a look at how foreign policy will influence, or not, the 2024 election. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Jason Chaffetz.
What's on your mind?
With all the protests happening at the colleges, there's two big questions that are out there. One, what will happen to the more than 900 people that have been arrested? Are they actually going to be prosecuted? Are they going to learn the lessons as an adult now of the repercussions of their actions? Who knows? That's a big question. The other really big question is, what is the funding behind this? Do we really think that these kids all spontaneously showed up on the campuses and demanded and asked questions about how their universities were investing in Israel? Really? Is that why they're protesting? Sure, they're protesting because they don't want to see the war going on, but why the demands for the questions about the funding of the universities in the state of Israel? That really is the big question, because there are all sorts of allegations of how and where the money is coming from. Follow the money, and I think we'll get the answers to the real questions. I'm Jason Chaffetz, the host of the Jason in the House podcast and a Fox News contributor.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to FoxNews.com.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.